Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith, alongside Shane Stetsny. How you doing, Shane?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. Finally collected myself and got some much-needed rest since ERX Motor Park. Just the longer travel and everything does take a lot out of me, and I think you probably feel the same.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a long trip there and back, and I mean, it's a great place, though. And
oh, for sure.
Now we're headed to Lena, but to say ERX was an understatement, it was one of the best times. I mean, it was no short of any carnage.
Yeah, there's a few different angles of looking at ERX Motor Park. I think we'll start with the good. We had a bunch of first-timers on the podium. Corbin Wassenberg got his first mod cart win right after he was on the podcast, by the way.
You're welcome.
Not saying we had anything to do with it, but it does seem like timing lines up, like maybe we're a good luck charm. Jack Smith got his first two wins in youth side-by-side, swept the weekend. Eric Lafreniere got his first light buggy win. I remember he said on the podium he's been chasing his first win for 9 years. And wow. Finally was able to get it done at ERX. A bunch of drivers got their first podiums. Chase Gehr in Pro Buggy. Gavin Plummer got a third place finish in Pro Spec.
Heck yeah, Gavin.
Cameron Rolfe and Dallas Page both had second place finishes across the two rounds in Sportsman Side-by-Side. Calvin Wagner got his first podium in the 170s. Quentin Mocco and Bennett Groh each got a podium finish in Short Course Kart. That's really cool to have a bunch of new faces on the podium, first-time winners, first-time podium finishers. That's really what you and I like to see, right?
Oh, yeah. Like Eric Lafreniere, I mean, that is crazy. 9 years, right? Never stopped. Kept digging deeper into the buggy division. And, man, now to get that
win. It's a lot of light buggy racing, man.
Oh, man, the torture. And just to overcome that, it's great to see. And my biggest thing is Gavin Plummer, right? He struggled coming into the prospect class, just mentally wise, just had a lot of talks with him and even talk with his parents how he would just get down on himself, right? Now it seems like he's comfy. He's set back in the seat and he's letting the truck work. And his drive is just outrageous right now. There was a couple times where the pro spec race, I was like, man, Shane, is that Gavin in there? He is just ripping.
Yeah, it's not like he didn't luck into his podium finish. He was outrunning like Avery Hemmer. You know, I mean, he was putting down consistent, really fast laps. Like he settled into a good groove and was just that fast.
Yeah, and you're not just going to settle to get a podium in that division anymore, right? I mean, there's so many trucks that can win. And
oh, you can bring your A game in pro spec and drive your tail off and still end up sixth.
Right, and be happy, and you're happy about your finish, you know? I mean, you had some guys that had some issues. I know Braden Bochaw, after coming off a good weekend, he struggled a little bit with some electrical issues. And, I mean, it's cool to see our rookies really digging deep and trying so hard, right? Like, now a couple different rookies in Pro Spec have gotten a podium. I mean, look at Draxton Schimmick. He ended up endoing upside down, but yeah. I'm sure he'll bounce back. He's had wins.
Well, we talked a lot about points battles on the show before we went out to ERX. I was looking at it again today. I think now is a good time to turn the page as far as sportsmen are concerned. From here on out, we're going to talk adjusted points. We're half a season in or over a half a season in for the sportsmen. So we'll start factoring in drop rounds, everything you hear from us during racing and here on the podcast moving forward. It's going to be the adjusted points. That being said, short course kart, top four are within 9 points. Super stock truck, 1 point between the two leaders. Top four separated by 16 points. Youth side by side, 2 points for the lead. 12 points across the top four, so some really fun sportsman points battles starting to take shape. And then on the pro side, 6 out of the 7 pro classes, 20 points or fewer between first and second. The point swings in the pro classes because of all of the qualifying bonus, you know, 20 is still pretty easy to make up in a hurry if you have a couple of good days. So to have 6 out of those 7 classes that close, with the exception of pro side by side, we're set up for some really fun racing for the second half of the year.
Right. And it's just crazy to think, Shane, that we're already talking points championships and what you're going to be needing to do in these next 3-4 rounds to make sure that you're ready to rock and roll the rest of the year. And it's crazy to see that tight of the points. And I love it because you know that they're all going to have to be conservative. At the same time, they're going to try to finish in front of one another, that they're trying to duke it up with two or three drivers, let alone trying to win a race. You got to really put your thinking cap on. And guys like Nick Bing and Super Stock Truck, this is where he really starts to rise to the top at the end of the year.
Right. And this is, you know, we mentioned this, I think, out at ERX, that ERX is kind of the point of the year where the people who have been overperforming start to get weeded out a little bit. You can get lucky or get out front of your skis a little bit in the first half of the season and continue that success, but it's really tough to sustain it throughout the whole year if your program isn't totally dialed in. And that's what we're starting to see. And I think the people who are now in those points battles that I talked about, by the way, the two closest in the pros, Pro Spec and Pro 4, 3 points each between Visser and Van den Elsen in Pro Spec, CJ Greaves and Jimmy Henderson in Pro 4. And by the way, CJ Greaves is back in the Pro 4 points lead. Didn't take him very long.
Yeah, it seems like he never was out of the seat. I mean, kudos to Kyle Greaves for putting those points together while he was out. But I knew it was just a matter of time. And now Jimmy Henderson, you know, not having the luck he wanted, I feel he'll bounce back. He's really strong in Lena, but so is CJ Greaves. So it's going to be a dogfight right until the end. We still have Bark River coming up in the Big House.
Yeah.
So anything can happen. So CJ is going to put himself where he needs to be, trust me. But Henderson, he's out for blood. He wants to win a championship.
Yeah, so being set up for a really fun second half, I think that's the best thing that happened out at ERX Motor Park. There was some bad as well. ERX, you touched on this. It was really rough on a lot of people. And we kind of said the same thing after Crandon, too. There was some really topsy-turvy, disjointed races with some weird incidents at Crandon. But ERX seemed even more so to be kind of out to get the drivers. The big one, Logan Fritzinger, we saw him on fire in Sportsman Side-by-Side in round 7. Had to go to the hospital to get some skin grafts. As of Tuesday that we're recording this, looks like still one more procedure in the future for him to get skin grafts, if not more than one, but for sure one. But Brent, you got to talk to him. He was hanging out with us. He was back at the track Sunday at ERX. Needed a place to sit that was out of the dust, so we offered up an extra spot in the booth. You got to talk to him quite a bit more than I did. What was your sense? How's Logan doing? How was he at that moment in time, one day removed from being on fire?
Man, for starters, though, he looked rough. I felt so bad for him, right? You just never want to see somebody go through that, just from the burns, from the legs to the arms to the face. And he was just trying to stay positive. It was great to have him up there, and we'd try to make him feel comfortable and put the headset on him a little bit, let him listen into the show. And he was being positive, but at the same time, he really wasn't too excited to get back in a car, right? He's like, Brent, it really scared me because I asked him, are you going to bounce back and try to find something because the car's pretty destroyed? He's like, right now I'm just scared to get back in. I'm like, well, you just take the time you need to get healthy and get your health back together and then worry about racing later. But that car was pretty toasted, and I think mentally he was really bummed out over that more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a lot to deal with kind of all at once. Especially when he's already had a lot of success racing, whether you're, you know, a teenager like Logan or a veteran like Johnny Greaves, it kind of becomes part of your identity a little bit. And then all of a sudden you have these moments where it feels like that could be taken away from you. And, you know, like I said, I think it can be emotional to face that. And unfortunately, it's something that a lot of drivers have faced.
Oh, yeah. And it's so scary, right? Just watch it from the booth, just... He can never get out quick enough. And, you know, things like that happen. I always tell you, you know, my biggest fear is fire. And when that happens, you just hope that everything works out in his favor. And he kind of took a beating from that. But I'm sure he's young. They're greedy yet, right? I mean, he's going to overcome all this. And, I mean, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, people helping him out. There's a GoFundMe to support everything in his recovery. And it's really cool to see the sport and the community helping out in a big way.
Yeah, look for that GoFundMe. Go to the Midwest Off-Road Racing Facebook page. I know they've shared it. I know it's been shared by a ton of other people. And man, a whole bunch of drivers, pro drivers, like guys who've never even raced a side-by-side, stepped up, threw a bunch of money in there. So it's already got a bunch of momentum. But By all means, we hope that those of you listening to us out there, if you haven't made a contribution yet, please do support one of our own. And then kind of the aftermath of that, this is a secondary thing to all of it. Tech started looking at fire safety gear the rest of the day, and a whole bunch of people got disqualified because they weren't wearing all the fire safety gear. Come on, man.
Right, I know. And
I shouldn't be laughing at it, and I'm sorry for making light of it, but like...
No, it's stressful.
Why are you in a race car if you're not wearing all the safety gear?
I agree. For the price of a pair of safety socks, right, under $30, you can get a pair.
$25, man.
Yeah, right, and that's your biggest fear is fire, and to protect yourself, and then when a catastrophic failure like that happens with a car and it starts on fire, then we have to look deeper, and I think we opened up a lot of eyes, and to say DQ'd was a little harsh on some of these drivers, absolutely not. They're doing their job. Our tech guys are going through the rule book, and that's not even rules, right? You should be sitting at home putting your bag together, and that should be one of your priorities, like your race shoes, safety socks, and your three-layer fire suit, right? Like, I was complaining growing up to anybody. I was like, man, it's so hot in that truck. But when things like that happen, you want to be in the best you possibly can be in.
Yeah, and I'm sure the DQs plus seeing a fellow competitor on fire, a lot of drivers will approach it differently. We see that anytime somebody gets hurt. How did they get hurt? What was the failure point that led to it? Okay, we're going to take the steps. I guess it's frustrating for me because, like, you and I keep seeing our friends get hurt.
Right.
Because they're not doing everything they can to be safe, right?
Right, absolutely. And it comes down to the window net and the location where you put the latch and all those little things when you're building the cars or keeping your kids safe, right? I mean, a lot of these younger racers, they're really not working on their own cars. So if your parents are listening out there, you know, make sure all that stuff is buttoned up, right? I mean, how many times we talked about being ready for a fire, practicing in the garage like you have a blindfold on with the lights off. Make sure you can get out in those crazy times, right? It's never easy, but put yourself in position to be the best you can, and safety's huge. That's all I can say is you got to be safe before you show up.
Well, moving on, another driver that had a bad time at ERX, Billy Booth, had a big rollover in round 7. Damaged some engine mounts and some stuff that they just simply could not get fixed in time for round 8. Sidelined him. That effectively takes him out of the championship hunt. That stinks for Billy Booth.
Ugh.
You and I were kind of rooting for Billy to stay in that fight. Pro Buggy is going to be super fun regardless, but, you know, for one fast guy to, like I said, effectively be out of the running, that's tough.
Well, I tell you one thing, that those split lanes took a beating on a lot of drivers. And when that happened with Billy Booth, it took the wind out of our sail because he's wanted to be consistent, but this was go time for him. And to miss a round this late in the year, I mean, yeah, it's just a little over halfway. It really is crucial. And I'm sure he's still going to be right there going for the wins, but you never want to see one of our top competitors like cut themselves out of the points that early in the year.
He wasn't the only one that was kind of the bad. We talked about the good. ERX, for whatever reason, got a little bit ugly a couple times as well. I think the big two viral moments, first it was the big rollover in round 7 for Ricky G. You and I don't necessarily have to adjudicate whether or not it was a penalty or whether the call by race control was the right one. Fact of the matter is they made some contact. Ricky G and Johnny Holcher did. Ricky G paid the price. Those two I know have talked it out. They're fine. Ricky told us as much on Saturday night at ERX. Said, I'm fine. I talked to Johnny. We're good. But twisted the heck out of that truck. Ricky G did.
Oh, yeah. It was really bad. It was tore up. And they're building these trucks so light and fast, right? So a big hit like that, anything can happen. And luckily, he was okay. And what do you do, right? Some people call it a racing incident. Some people say it was a no-touch zone. You can say what it is. It happened, but I hope Ricky can bounce back. It's going to be close, it seems like.
I know a few hundred race directors on the internet were commenting on everybody's posts about it, so naturally.
Right, right. And, you know, it happens. And like I said, you know, I hope Ricky and them can make it back out here sooner than later. They have the best of the best behind them working on it. So it's crazy to see something happen like that, but we've seen it before, right?
Right. And for the record, it's Tuesday night of Dirt City as we're recording. As of today, Tuesday, they figured the truck would be done like probably Thursday. So basically enough time to, you know, and it's in Wisconsin still. So enough time to load it up and be in Lena Thursday night, probably early Friday morning, like just in time to practice on Friday. So cutting it close, but they're kind of waiting on parts. If you can believe it, that's been the storyline for a whole bunch of drivers over the past couple months, but waiting on the last couple parts, hoping to make it to Lena, which is incredible. That's, you know, a 10-day turnaround from folding a race truck in half to having it race ready again. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and no sleep at all for that group. And they're normally like that no matter what time of year it is. They're busting tail to just get what their project is done. And like Mr. Gutierrez said, you know, it's in good hands. We're going to let them do what they do best. And I believe they'll be out there unless something crazy happens. I know they're putting their foot in the right place to get back into Lena. And I don't think Ricky G needs much test time. It's just a matter of getting the truck to feel the way it was when he finished out at ERX.
Then the other, I guess, semi-viral moment from ERX Motor Park round 7 and 8 was whatever the heck that Pro 4 race was in round 8. So Jimmy Henderson had the lead early on, got bit by the split lanes, ended up upside down. His day was done. Mickey Thomas took over and picked up another win, so he's now won at 3 straight tracks. So something to keep an eye on as we head to another tighter track. He was able to outrun RJ Anderson. Pretty good battle between those two, but right after halfway, Johnny Greaves, Andrew Carlson, who was down a lap or two at that time, they started getting into each other, and for some reason, neither of them could stop getting into each other, and it took them both out of the race. What in the world was that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It was hard. And the time of the moment of watching it live, it was like, what are you guys doing, right? I mean, I know it was hot out there. They were cranky. They were mad. It was a long race. Those split lanes were tearing everybody up. But, you know, sometimes you got to just leave some of that stuff back in the pits, what they were doing out there. But like Johnny, he's been around a long, long time. Andrew, that's his hometown track, and he won't put up with it either. So they ended up both pretty tore up, and they'll live to fight another day. But Johnny putting it on social media, he really felt really bummed out about what he did.
Yeah, you could tell he was remorseful about it, and he basically said, like, that was the end of a really long, hot weekend, and it was. I mean, the heat index both days was like 100 degrees. Not an excuse, but, you know, he took accountability and said, like, both of them were acting out of character, and that's kind of how you and I saw it, I think, too. But just another moment, like, you know, what are we looking at? In the moment, it was just, you know, why are we doing this? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, you can't have that, but they'll overcome it. They'll be bigger and better from here on forward, and hope to see AC back in the Pro 4 more this season.
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, he adds another talented, fast, fun character.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Fun type of guy into that group. I just hope that, you know, Dirt City is another tight track, and, you know, the drivers that are there in Pro 4, and for that matter, all the pro classes, Pro Light, Pro 2, Pro Spec, especially the truck classes. I just hope everybody can get along. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, me too, Shade. I really hope that they can all shake hands at the end of the day, but it's hard to tame them all down, especially on a tight bull ring like Dirt City. It's going to happen. We're going to lose panels. We're going to get off people. But at the end of the day, you got to be your cool, calm, and collect if you want to win there. Because like Eric Hill said perfectly, you know, you can start out front and end in the front, but you do not want to mess with the rear of the field and then come through the field, because it's definitely going to cost you maybe the win or not even finish.
Right. Well, at this moment, I want to remind all of you that this podcast is brought to you by AMSOIL. If you love power and performance and saving money, become an AMSOIL preferred customer. You'll save up to 25% on AMSOIL products and receive free shipping, exclusive promotions, and more. Visit AMSOIL.com and sign up today.
Well, next up on the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL, we have Eric Hill. How you doing, Eric?
Good. How about you, Brent?
Very good. Shane and I are excited to get ready for Lena this coming weekend. And man, Shane, it's been a whirlwind this year with the carnage and a lot of great racing. But man, Lena's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a really good weekend. And I know you are as well, Eric. But I want to take it back to the start of the season. I know Brent and I have told your story kind of on your behalf a couple times now that you lost a motor in Wheatland. You were really bummed out when you came up and told us about it. you kind of said you didn't know what your future in short course looked like at that point. Now we're like 80 days later. You're third in the points if you make the adjustment for the drop rounds. Three straight podium finishes in Sportsman side-by-side. Tell us about the up and down, or down and then up season that you've had so far.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the season didn't start out as we anticipated it. Came with pretty high hopes for this season. Knowing that the top three guys moved out of the class, we were definitely going for a championship this season, and to make that trip down to Wheatland and blow the motor on the first day, it definitely took the wind out of our sails. And like you said, didn't know what our plans were after doing that. We're a small budget team here, and a motor is a pretty catastrophic failure. But got on the phone to the family back home after that, and my mom said, well, get out there and see what you can find. So definitely this season was brought back full steam ahead by my mom. She helped cover the motor. We're a family team. You know, I have my kids at the track with me. Anytime I podium, they're right there on the podium with me as well. And, you know, it's definitely a family-run team. And, you know, mom definitely kept the season alive, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Hey, that's what you need, though, right? I mean, all the family is there to support you and help you in any way they can. And it's nice to have something to lean back on because, like Shane said, you know, you didn't think you were going to get back out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is my 20th year of racing. So I started racing in 2006 on snowmobiles. And I think I can count on one hand how many races my mom has missed. Up until my dad passed away in 2014, he didn't miss a race at all either. So definitely been a family operation from day one for us.
So now that hopefully all the adversity for the season is already in the rearview mirror, the last three rounds, like I said, three straight podium finishes, is that kind of more what you expected coming into the season?
Yeah. You know, I think we all strive to hit the podium, but coming into the season, we just wanted consistent top five finishes. We knew that would kind of put us in a spot where we would be in championship contentions. Last year, we made some adjustments, and they didn't quite go our way, and we didn't even land in the top five last year. But when the dust settled, we ended up fourth in points on the year. So going into this year, we just wanted consistent finishes. We knew if we could finish in the top five that we would probably land on the podium a few weekends, and that would put us in a good shot for a championship. But first weekend didn't go as planned. We had a good run in Anagul, and then, you know, that elusive tractor tire got a hold of us there on Sunday. Kind of took the wind out of our sails again, but the last three weekends here, we've really stepped it up. We got our confidence back, and we've been on the podium all last three rounds.
When you have a really rough start to your season like that, Eric, does it change the way you approach the rest of the year? Like, does it make you push even harder to get good results, or do you kind of just throw your hands up and go, we're just going to take whatever comes our way? Like, how does it make you react when it starts that badly?
You know, at first I was like, you know, we're going to go out there, we got to get on the podium every time, we got to try to win. But once you strap the helmet on and you're in the car, your game plan kind of goes away, and, you know, it's kind of a take what we can get. I want to keep the car together. I want to hit every round this year. If I, you know, make a bonehead move and tear up the car again, I don't have any drop rounds left, right?
Right.
So these drop rounds definitely play into it, and it keeps you thinking. So we need to get finishes. We need to consistently be in the top five. And, it, you know, let's go back to ERX. That kind of played into my favor on Sunday. We were sitting in the fifth spot. I knew that'd be a good points day. You had Huss and Werhanowitz were in front of me running third and fourth. And that final lap, we came into turn one, and they were bouncing, banging off each other, and Werhanowitz was getting a little bit aggressive. So I was comfortable finishing fifth, knowing it'd be a good points day. They came into turn two. I gave them a little bit of extra space, and Werhanowitz got into Huss. They spun out on the bottom, and I was able to go around the high side and, you know, finish out in third. So just it's being on your toes. It's being consistent with your finishes and knowing you can't wreck the car, right? Every point for us now matters.
Yeah, and I mean, taking that approach is huge in all different ways. I mean, you know, from here on out, right, you can't afford to do anything bad, like you said. But, hey, you know, if you can get those gifts given you late in the race, that's what you have to take. And, I mean, it's been fun watching you so far this year because Shane and I always bump each other when you're working your way through the field because just what you've came over and gotten accomplished since what went on is just amazing. And I look for big things out of you, and you're just running against all those young guns.
Yeah, it's definitely a younger crowd out there right now. They don't have as much to lose, I guess, as you can say, our older guys like myself and, you know, a couple of us others in the class.
You're still young.
We got to go to work on Monday. We're paying for it, but it's definitely fun to have the new blood, and I think it keeps us older guys in the class on our toes and keeps us young and pushing the envelope here. So
I was going back several years, like looking at point standings and results in sportsmen side by side. I'm pretty sure that you and Marsha Jones are the longest running drivers in sportsmen side by side who have been trying to race full time anyways.
Yeah. I think this might be my fourth or fifth year. I just, you know, I had my share up running in Pro-Am class, and we can definitely run with those guys, but I feel like I have a little bit of unfinished business. Still have yet to get my first career short course win. So trying to do that, and definitely want to chase a world championship and a points championship before moving up. So that's kind of our goal going into this year. I think we still have a shot at all of it, and we'll see what the next year brings.
Is it weird to look around, you know, after the last couple of years where a lot of other drivers have moved out of sportsmen, and you look around and like I said, you and Marsha are the old people in the class? Is that weird for you? It's funny for me to say because you're younger than Brent and me.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, but you know, you got guys like Carson Hill, Code St. Peter, who we ran in sportsmen last year, and you know, they jumped up to Pro-Am this year, and look at where they're running. They're running right up front as well. So it's, you know, that kind of came into play this year as well. Knowing that can't quite compete with them, you know, those two kids are weapons. You know, they're going to be kids to watch, not just in the side-by-side classes going up, but I think you'll see both of those kids in trucks. And, you know, so that kind of played into sticking back this year in the sportsman class as well, just, you know, knowing that we can't really compete with them. And then, you know, my teammate that I run with every weekend, Josh Geideman, he's already up in the Pro-Am class as well. We share some sponsors as well, too, that kind of want a little bit of class separation. So
sure,
all that kind of comes into play, kind of why we're sticking where we're comfortable. And I hate to say it, but I do kind of like racing first thing in the morning, getting it out of the way. I don't know what it is, but nerves get the best of me. So you know, you wake up, go to that 7 o'clock driver's meeting nervous, and by 9 o'clock the rest of the day is yours. So
now I hate to say this, but that kind of is old guy mentality. Like the teenagers, they don't want to be out there on the track at 8 a.m. on a Sunday.
Right, yeah. You know, we're up at 6 o'clock to go to work, so 7 o'clock, sleeping in a little bit.
Do you find yourself, Eric, like teaching yourself things as you go through the race and like learning from the other drivers, even though they're younger than you, right? I mean, these drivers are doing some crazy moves and crazy lines and always picking the fast way. I mean, when some of those young talents get out in front of you, do you try to play follow the leader for a while and learn?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got to learn from them, right? They're hitting their marks. There's a lot of them have good spotters. Their dad's up in the spotter stand who used to race as well and have probably a lot more laps on a lot of these tracks than I do myself. So definitely try to learn, set them up. Fast cars right now in the class, all side-by-side classes are the Polaris's, right? And, you know, there's still a few of us hanging on to the Yamahas, don't quite want to put our hands into a belt drive car yet.
Yeah.
So we definitely have to look at where we can set up a pass. And typically we're looking at a corner or two before Cranon, for example, right? You know, we got to set up a pass in the gravel pit. We're looking to carry our momentum all the way through Argonne and into the gravel pit. So we got to set them up a little bit different. We got to carry our momentum. You know, we're shifting our cars. We're the Polaris is our gas and brake driver. But so yeah, definitely keep an eye on the cars in front of you and see where you can set them up.
You touched on this a little bit. There are fewer drivers now running Yamahas. No doubt part of that is because Yamaha, they don't have like an off-road short course program at all anymore. The YXC platform's not being made anymore. Further down the road, what does that mean for not just you, but other drivers who are still running a Yamaha car? And maybe if you want to speak on like broadly the entire industry, the sport, what does that mean that Yamaha doesn't have a racing program?
It's really hard to say what the next goal is for me or where I'm going to go after the Yamaha here. If they'd say it now, but my car will be for sale after Fall Crandon. Again, I don't know what my plans will be for for next year, whether we'll look at getting in something else where we might take a couple years off and rebuild our program. But I think if you want to compete, Polaris is definitely the way to go. They got the support. They're continuing to develop their cars, where Yamaha and the other manufacturers aren't focusing on the racing side of things. You know, they're looking at more of the pleasure stuff and the utility type stuff. It's great that Polaris is a manufacturer that's supporting the race division, because I definitely think the side-by-side classes are a place for drivers to grow and advance in the sport. I know a lot of people aren't necessarily about the side-by-side, but look at how many of them have, how many side-by-side drivers have jumped up into the truck classes. I think it's definitely a good feeder. And, you know, I started out racing short course in a light buggy. I did it for a season. I had carburetor issues and you bend front arms and you're sandblasting them for rust. And it's a lot to keep a light buggy on the track.
Yeah. You know, trying to find parts that haven't been made in a factory for 45 years.
Correct. Yeah. it's a challenge in itself. And, you know, the side-by-sides are, you can go to your local dealer and get the part off the shelf. You can, you know, partner with your local dealerships, and, you know, you might get a sponsorship out of it, even a parts allowance or something like that, that helps you, you know, on the marketing aspect as well. So I think the side-by-side classes are great. I'd love to see more manufacturers in it. I started out racing snowmobiles, and I was a Skidoo guy through and through, and it'd be nice to see Can-Am come out with an NA car. That definitely probably bring me right back into it quicker than I'd expect if Can-Am had one. Yeah, unfortunately, I think the Yamahas are going to keep dwindling, and years to come, you probably won't see many of them left on the track.
Would you stick to side-by-sides? Like, say, if you take a year or two off, or would you go to a different class, say another buggy class, or maybe a truck, or are you committed to the side-by-side?
I'd love to get into a pro spec. I've talked at length with this with Chris VanenElzen. Him and I are really good buddies. He actually co-drove for me back when I was racing rally cars. So him and I go way back, and, you know, ultimate goal would be a pro spec, but I don't think I have the resources and the crew to make that happen. And a buggy just doesn't give me the same thrill, same speed as I think a truck or a side-by-side would. So side-by-side is about the closest thing I've found to a rally car, driving aspect and things like that. So I'm pretty well set on a side-by-side. The new Pro-Am turbo class is kind of appealing. But with a turbo, that's another variable to go wrong,
right,
and increase cost. So NA side-by-side is probably where I'll live and die in short course, unless an opportunity comes along where we can get in a truck with some partners and a dedicated crew. But my crew right now is all volunteer. They're actually out in the garage right now putting the final touches on the car, and while I'm in here talking with you guys. So definitely got to thank those guys that show up every weekend for me.
Part of, you know, being a veteran, not just in short course, but like you said, you've been racing stuff for over a decade. You gain a different perspective after you do something competitive for that long. Do you notice that about yourself, that you look at racing quite a bit differently than you did maybe when you were 25?
Yeah, absolutely. I was super competitive in my younger years. I'm not saying that I'm not competitive now, but, you know, when a race wouldn't go my way, it beat me up quite a bit. And, you know, the last, say, 5-6 years, I've gone in with let's have fun racing, right? And if you're having fun, the podiums will come, and the championships and things like that'll come your way. So we go out every weekend and we have fun with it. You know, we hit the tractor tire at Antigo, and, you know, we blew the engine at Wheatland, and, you know, it was still fun. There's still memories to take away from every weekend that you race, whether it's good or bad. So that, I think that mindset shift has definitely helped, and it's a side of, you know, maturity as well, you know. And maybe some of these younger kids can learn from us older guys on that aspect as well. Yeah. You see some of them getting pretty upset walking around the pits and things like that. But it's we got to just be thankful every day that we're out there able to race, and, you know, we walk off the track in one piece.
That really echoes what Michael Meister told us when we had him on the podcast a few weeks back. He said basically the same thing. You know, 10 years into it, you realize that you're going to have probably more bad days than good days. But if you can just let that roll off your shoulders and keep moving forward, like the good days, you start to appreciate him more. So I think it's interesting that, you know, two different career paths for sure, but you guys kind of echoed the same sentiment there.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the old saying? You know, a bad day at the racetrack is still better than a good day at work.
Along the way, I know that the last couple of years, your sons have gotten into kart racing. How much have you learned from them, not just being their crew chief, their coach, but, you know, learned from watching them grow? And how much has that changed your perspective on your own racing?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. They're little wheelmen themselves. You know, they've got 8-year-old twins. So, you know, Brent, you're a twin yourself, so you can probably relate to seeing your brother race. And, you know, for me, it's my kid, but it's absolutely awesome seeing them work together out on the racetrack. And they both picked up some feature wins. They both picked up some heat wins. And I don't care how many times I'm on the podium, nothing will compare to seeing those two kids battle it out together and pull off a win. Last year, we were at a special race, fall special, and my son Gavin, he was leading most of the race, and with 5 to go, his brother Carson came from 3rd and put a move on him in the bottom of turn 1, pushed him wide, and went on to win the race. And you know, I thought one of them was going to be a little upset, but like I just said, that mindset of we're going to the racetrack to have fun, that's what we're here for, and the wins will come. There was no hard feelings, there was no temper tantrums, there was nothing. So being able to watch them not get upset when things happen definitely makes you think about yourself and what kind of example are you putting in them if you get upset. So it's definitely cool to watch them grow as a racer, and I think that's part of the reason why the car is going to go for sale after Labor Day Crandon, is we're going to focus on some kart stuff here in the future and try to build some drivers out of them. Their heart's not necessarily in the go-karts, but they want to get in a short course kart or
there you go,
570 or a Youth 1000. But with the track time that we're allotted in Champ right now, I don't feel that's the best place to get them wheel time and build their confidence and their driver skills. So kart track, they get 4 times on the track. So if they screw something up in heat 1, we can go back to the pit, break down the race, and try to correct it right away that same day. So hopefully this strategy works out for us. And when we get them out in the short course, that we're a leg up.
It's got to be fun, though, just working with your kids, though, watching them progress, you know, from the first day they got on a pedal bike to now they're running carts. And I agree with you 120% that you should just keep them in carts for right now. And it is hard with the track time and short course to get them laps. And I think they'll become very rounded drivers just coming up through the kart ranks.
Yeah, and I'm definitely asking the questions to certain parents right now with the short course kart stuff and the Youth 1000s. I'm asking the questions so they know the kids are going to come up eventually. It's trying to build the knowledge base of everything right now. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to hopefully come out swinging when the time comes, but karts is our path right now. We got a good group of people helping with the karts as well. That have been involved in kart racing for quite a while. And it's been a journey so far. One son really wasn't into it when we started out 4 years ago with them, and now they both have to go to the track every week.
You're like, dang it. Oh, it's double the cost.
Yeah, it's the memories, right? You know, I raced with my dad starting in 06, like I said before, and, you know, he's no longer with us. He passed away in 2014. But I look back at pictures and the memories at the racetrack, and when I grew up, he was racing snowmobiles, and you know, it's all about the memories you make. You know, memories last forever. You can always make another dollar later.
One thing that Brent and I for sure have noticed about you, or maybe I shouldn't speak for Brent, I've definitely noticed about you is, and you've touched on this already, you have a ton of really what seem like strong friendships, really good relationships with other people at the racetrack, not just other drivers, but just people around the racetrack. You mentioned, you know, Chris Vanden Elzen being your former rally co-driver and pitting with Josh Skiteman. And I know that there's a bunch of other drivers that you cut up with and catch up with that I see you chatting with quite a bit. Are those personal connections? That's like really the whole point of all this racing stuff, right? Especially as we get older.
Yeah, it's racing's one big family, you know, and camaraderie that I had in rally, if you needed a part, you could go get it. And, you know, that same camaraderie is in off-road as well. I didn't come from an off-road background. Like I said, my dad raced snowmobiles. We had a skidoo dealership for a number of years. I got my start racing snowmobiles, but I went to Crandon once in the early 2000s because my buddy had a cabin up in Mountain, and that was my first taste of short course. And I remember Carl Renner there. That's back when he was racing a Chevy, and that's about all I remember in my childhood in short course off-road. But
nice.
A number of years later, I was racing RC cars. I think there's a lot of us in short course off-road that race RC cars. I
don't get Nolan started.
Yeah, I know he's definitely a big RC car guy as well. And you know, we've ran into each other a couple times at the RC track as well, and it's cool to see him out there. So we do that in the winter time, so it's good catching up with him there. But so I was at the RC track, and I bumped into Matt Gerald, and I was kind of looking for something to do in the summer in between my rally races, and he was looking for a crew guy, and that's how I got my start. And you know, so that was like probably 2010 or 2011. Went to Redbud with him. That's back when they were still racing Redbud, and that's when I was really headfirst into off-road. And you know, Matt's been around the sport for a very long time, so you know that he definitely helped make a lot of connections, and he's well respected in the sport, and definitely in the buggy classes. But there I met John Fitzgerald, and you know, worked on his pro buggy for a little while. And then after Matt's accident, Chad Rayford gave me a call and was, hey, you want to go help Ari Londyke? And you know, just getting calls to go help other people and just build the friendships, and you know, able to gain a lot of knowledge.
Then you were hooked. It was like, we were hooked.
And then I was helping Tower City out one year. I was going to step away for short course a little bit. I told Tower City, I said, I'll come spot, but I don't want a wrench. I don't want to do anything. And all of a sudden, a car landed in my garage right before Bark River in 2019. It was a light buggy. Actually, Chris Bannon, that was his first light buggy. So it just seems like I can't get away from Chris. So no matter how hard I try, right? His first light buggy landed in my garage, and we were hooked from there.
I was thinking it more seems like you can't wash the buggy stink off you.
Yeah, well, that could be too. Okay, I don't know. But yeah, then we ran that at Bark River. Kind of was like, all right, this is something we can do. And was walking the pits at Bark River, and Tim Christensen said, hey, I've got a buggy chassis behind my shed. Why don't you come take a look at it? And went and looked at it and brought that back to life and raced that a season. Like I said, just some rough luck with it, chasing 60-year-old parts. And I was racing with Corey Podowski at the time, and he had a side-by-side, so we kind of talked. And my crew chief at the time, Adam Kamberg, he wanted to get into racing. I made a deal with him. He bought the light buggy, and we went out and purchased a side-by-side. And that's kind of been history from there in the side-by-side class. And, you know, light buggy's still around. Steve Hawkers brought it out of retirement last year. And, you know, it's cool to see the old stuff still out there.
It's also crazy how quickly you can, like, build all those connections. It's like I don't know if you're a big pro football fan like me, but you hear about coaching trees. Like, this legendary head coach had this many people that worked under him that went on to be head coaches, and you know, your tree of connections in short course is kind of a sprawling wide variety of people in a short time.
Yeah, it's a good group of people. You know, it's, you know, CJ met CJ through RC cars too, and you know, now my kids are giant CJ fans. They run over and you know, talk with them, and same with Johnny and Kathy too. They're all about the boys, and everybody's a person. Everybody puts their pants on the same way. And whether you're a small sportsman guy like me or a pro guy, you can build a connection with anybody. So that's a little bit of advice I got to give to some of these newer guys that are coming up. You know, for example, Dawson Lang, he's out in the sportsman class right now, and he's been kind of struggling. You know, we've kind of taken him under our wing, helped him with some tires, and you know, looking over his car and find out that he had some missing parts, and you know, just try to help out who we can. And you know, like you said, build a community and build your friendship.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, though, at the end of the day, right? If you can go and borrow something with someone and days down the road or 5 years down the road, they need something. It's nice to interchange and intertwine with people that have your back because, you know, it's an expensive sport, but not all of us can bring the spare parts that we need to have every part. And that's what makes it so special in our sport. And I'll say it all the time that, you know, there's more friends than enemies.
Absolutely. Your friends in the pits, but your enemies on the track, right? And I'd rather beat my competitors on their best day than not having them on the track at all.
Well, looking ahead to this weekend, I guess Lena would be your home race, right? It's like 45 minutes from where you're at.
Yeah, I'm in Seymour, so 35, sure. 40 minutes, something like that.
It's also, you know, for a lot of those friends that we were just talking about, it's also kind of their home track. Does that make Lena and, you know, this weekend in particular feel kind of more like a family reunion than any other race weekend?
Yeah, we get a lot of our friends that make it out there because it is a day trip, right? They don't have to set aside a whole weekend. Right. They can come for a few hours. So a lot of fans turn out for it, which is really cool. They got the parade downtown on Friday night. Gives us a good time to interact with fans and, you know, family and things like that. It's a good environment. It's nice having that facility close to home. I've done a very nice job with it, so it's cool to have it close to us.
Yeah, I always said that Lena is a special place. It's that little bullring track that you have to be well aware of your surroundings because you can lose a lot of positions at any given time. But, you know, we have our big fast tracks where you need the power to do it. But I feel like the drivers really show their top style at that track.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking forward to the weekend and seeing everybody, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not necessarily looking forward to the track. I've had a not so great luck there, but hopefully we can turn that around this weekend. Maybe I'll love Lena after this weekend for the racing on the track instead of everything else that goes along with it.
Do you have a different approach when, you know, you look back at last year and I think you had 2 10th place finishes and been a while since you were in the top five there? Does that make you press a little bit harder? Or again, are you just trying to go in with a clean slate and a clear mind and just take what comes to you?
We got to finish the weekends and, you know, a DNF isn't going to do us any good. So we're going to keep a level head, not be too aggressive. I don't know what it is with this year, but I found some confidence in my driving and in myself getting through traffic. I've never really been comfortable with side-by-side racing with people. Rally cars, I was in the woods by myself. I did that for 10 years. So, you know, the trees didn't move towards you like other drivers do. But this year I've definitely found some confidence with getting through traffic, and I think that shows that some of the misfortune that I've had getting shuffled to the back and working my way back up there. So we're going to hopefully get through traffic. I think we weren't the fastest car at ERX on Sunday, so that should hopefully give us a top five starting spot at Lena for Saturday. And Lena's kind of a track you start out front, you're likely going to finish there because it is that tight bullring, like Brent said.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't need to be the fastest car to win there. You need a little bit of luck to go your way, and you got to stay clean. I know they got tractor tires too, so I'm going to be a little bit cautious around those as well. But yeah, we're just going to keep our nose clean and finish the weekend and hopefully drive the car in the trailer at the end of it and hopefully make up some more ground on this points chase. And Chad Emmings, he's got a little bit on us and a little bit on the rest of the field. He's been on a hot streak here, and you know, we were joking in ERX on Sunday that roles need to be reversed. I need to get on top, and he's all right with taking a second or a third, so hopefully we can make that happen this weekend.
Well, he says that now.
Yeah,
that things could change, right?
Right.
Well, Eric, it was great talking with you, and we hope that you have the best weekend and you get to turn things around, right? It's only going to get better from here on forward. Just stay positive, and thanks for taking the time to chit-chat with us before Lena.
Yeah, absolutely. I thank you guys for having me on, and it's always great talking with you guys at the track. I thank you guys for all you guys do as well for the sport and the broadcast and everything you do for Champ. It definitely makes it a fun environment, and it wouldn't be the same without you guys.
Thanks, man.
Brent, looking ahead fully now at rounds 9 and 10 at Dirt City Motorplex. A couple drivers back in the fray for this weekend. Corey Winter back in Pro 2. I believe Aaron Holiday also making his season debut in Pro 2. We'll see our friend Justin Tesmer back in Pro Spec. And I also saw that TJ Ewart is going to be coming back out in Stock Truck. He hasn't raced all season. Said Stan Wood and a couple other guys stepped up to help him out, and he's dusting off the boots and jumping back into it. So it'll be cool to see TJ back out there in what's already a super fun group of drivers in Stock Truck.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see TJ back in the seat. He's always fun to watch. He always is one to finish up in the top three no matter what race he shows up at, and it's cool to see Winter back. Aaron Holiday in the Pro 2, I know he went through a lot of work on that truck, and they're back halfing it, cutting the top off, and I think he got Zach Sikowski's former truck as well. So he was working to try to put a truck together. So it's awesome to see him. Tesmer, he's always fast. He's excited. He's really gotten close with his shock partner, and he feels like the truck's never landed that good. So I'm looking for big things out of him. He's a great race car driver as well. He's got a good truck underneath him.
Well, I mentioned earlier, Brent, that especially on the pro side, a whole bunch of really good points battles. Pro buggy, even with the bad news that Billy Booth, I think, now is 65 points back, so kind of out of it. Still an outside chance, but what that leaves atop the point standings is Michael Meister 9 points ahead of Cole Bernlohr. Neither of those drivers raced Dirt City last year, so we don't really have any recent history to make a prediction off of, but which one of those two do you think leaves Dirt City with the points lead in Pro Buggy?
I gotta go with my boy Michael Meister. He's always consistent. Once he gets back in the field and he gets his feet wet and focuses on that championship, he's going to be tough to beat. I mean, nothing against Cole Bernlohr. He's fast, but it's all a clean slate for them, right? They weren't there last year. So whichever one gets out in front of another, I believe they're going to lead after the weekend in the points chase, because it's just that close. I mean, and it goes, you can't have a DNF, right? We look at that right. So many times. You can't break down, because see what happens through the ranks in Pro Buggy, anything with Billy Booth having that issue, it costed him like crazy. So I believe Michael Meister is going to overcome everything and continuing on to do big and better things in that class.
I think what you said about whichever driver gets out front of the other one, that sounds like a really reductive way to say it. But when you consider how tough it is going to be to pass at Dirt City,
right,
it literally might come down to qualifying times and luck of the draw with inverts.
Yeah, and that's why you got to get the points.
Like, whichever one of those two drivers has a good qualifying day to set the tone for the weekend could make the difference. And it doesn't matter which one.
Yeah, and it's huge. And qualifying is everything in the pro divisions too. So, I mean, and that's a leg up on one another. So if Cole can get that top spot qualifying, it gives him that confidence. I mean, look out. You never know what can happen in that pro buggy division.
Well, another one that's really close, I mentioned this one earlier when talking about pro points. Nick Visser, 3 points ahead of Chris Van den Elzen in pro spec. We do have recent history for those two. They split the two wins in pro spec back at Dirt City in 2025. Can you even make a prediction on which one of those two is going to leave Dirt City in the points lead?
Man, I think it's going to be hard to cool down Chris Van den Elzen right now. He's just on a bit of a streak here.
Three in a
he's
row.
Doing everything. I mean, he's swept the weekend at ERX Motor Park, and if he can qualify up front, right, and stay out of carnage, I believe that confidence is going to pull him a long way.
My only counterpoint to that is, yes, you know, if you believe in, like, momentum from one day to the next, Chris has all of it right now. Visser was on the podium both days at ERX, though.
Right.
And out of the two of them, Visser, I think, is a little bit more accustomed to the style of racing that we might see at Dirt City, which is to say it's going to be probably a little bit more physical than what we've seen.
Right.
Going back to Crandon and ERX.
Yeah, it's going to be rough.
If there's an advantage for Nick Visser, it's that when things get physical, he's probably the toughest guy out there.
Yeah, he's an old super stock truck buddy, right? He's just an old dog that knows how to keep his elbows out. And I'm not taking nothing away from Nick. He's going to be there up until the end, and he could win the championship. Chris could win it.
There's still like 6 guys in pro spec that could win it, by the way.
Right, and we haven't even talked really about the thriller Wyatt Miller. He's been up and down.
Avery Hemmer is still there. How about Pro 4? So CJ, like I said, has slipped right back into the points lead. CJ swept Dirt City last year. Last year, we didn't have a full-strength Mickey Thomas yet in Pro 4, so I think there's a difference there. And then after CJ swept Dirt City last year, Jimmy Henderson won 4 of the 5 remaining points races, by the way. So out of those two, which driver do you think gets the upper hand this year at Dirt City and leaves with the points lead?
Man, I think Henderson, after rolling over at ERX Motor Park, I don't want to take the crazy amount of wins away that CJ's earned in Pro 4 by all means, but, you know, Henderson's just hungry. He needs to win a couple here to switch his season around, and if he wants to keep CJ tame, he has to show something at this point in the season. I believe Henderson, like I said, he's got blood in the water. He's tasting that blood. He wants to get the job done. And I think he needs to start right now. And CJ's going to be there. Don't get me wrong. He's going to be in the top three no matter what. And you can't make any mistake when you have CJ hunting you down.
I think, like we said about Pro Buggy, a lot of what happens in Pro 4 over the next two rounds this weekend is going to come down to what happens on qualifying day. I think that does favor Henderson just a little bit over CJ. Henderson tends to qualify a little bit better than CJ, or be more willing to be aggressive on qualifying day is maybe the difference, or maybe the right way to say it.
Right, right. And you, like you said, those are big points. Qualifying points are huge. And if you can be the top qualifier each and every weekend, that's going to add up at the end of the year. And like we talk about Corey Winter coming back, he knows what it's like to lose by just one or two points at the end of the year. So
you keep bringing that up. Eventually, he's going to give you a hard time about it, by the way.
I know, I know.
It was like 4 years ago now, and you keep bringing up the 1 point or 2 points that it was. He got one since then, I guess, so it's probably not as sore of a point for him.
Right.
And then one on the sportsman side that I think is really fun and kind of an intriguing battle, especially looking at where we're racing next. William Holcher, 2 points back of Peyton Weisbrod in youth side-by-side. Both those drivers have consistently been finishing up in like the top three, top four in that class. It's William's home track. You know, anybody with the last name Holcher seems to perform pretty well at Dirt City. But Peyton's been just as consistent. How do you see that battle between those two shaking out in Dirt City this weekend?
Well, I believe it's going to come down to the wire, right? I mean, William Holcher, you said it perfectly. You know, they normally do very well at their hometown track. Peyton's been very fast. It's going to come down to track position again, right? I mean, William has a lot of wins this season in two different classes. He's been showing the confidence, like we like to say, and it's going to be hard to beat him. But Peyton's putting herself in the position to run that pace, and anything can happen. But I think William, over and above this weekend, is going to really open up that gap.
Do you think William's going to be able to keep that win streak alive in the 570s?
I don't know, man. He always is talking to you and I. He wants to go 14 for 14, and we keep telling him take one at a time, but he keeps on taking two a weekend. So I believe he's going to keep the streak alive. I really do in that class.
Yeah, either way, it's going to be fun to watch. You know, like I said, just how many of these classes are really tight. I know short course card is really tight. Super stock truck, which is always a favorite, especially at Dirt City. Another really tight one, just a matter of a couple points, I think, between Bing and Belanger. So much to be excited about. You know, a lot to be not decided at Dirt City for rounds 9 and 10, but the points pictures are going to start to come into focus a little bit. Like you said, for the sportsmen, after that, it's Bark River and it's Crandon, and everything is decided. So a lot to be sorted out over these next six rounds for the sportsmen, and it all starts at Dirt City.
No, it's going to be fun, Shane. I love it. Like we always say, it's that little short track, that bull ring. Panels are optional, and I believe we're going to get some great racing out of it, and I'm glad we're coming back, and you always need your short tracks in your racing. And
oh, yeah.
It all starts on Friday night downtown.
Yeah, Thunder on Main. I absolutely love it. You know, kind of taking a page out of Crandon's playbook, bringing the race cars, race trucks downtown into Lena, which downtown Lena is, what, 3/4 of a mile from the racetrack. It's just on the other side of the highway. That starts 6 p.m. on Friday. It's something that you and I know always look forward to, mostly for a selfish reason, and that's because all the drivers are there, so we don't have to walk as far to talk to people. But it's great to catch up with, you know, some of our friends, some of the local people that we've gotten to know over the years. There's food trucks, there's live music, kind of a carnival atmosphere. It's just a really great time to set the stage for a good weekend of racing.
Yeah, it's always nice to bump elbows with your favorite drivers and come down, get some autographs, and hang out with us. And you know, it's always a packed house, and I loved what Crandon did for so many years down in the fall on Main Street, and I think every racetrack should have a little welcoming party and a gathering like this, because it really brings the fans out and gets more people to the track.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I would co-sign that idea 100%. Let's do it at every place we go. One other thing I really love about Lena, and we've seen this over the years, you know, originally it was a track built by sportsman racers. For sportsman racers and side-by-side racers. And the racing in those classes, especially at Lena, is always super, super good. So I'm excited to see the best of the best in the sportsman ranks do battle on a track built for them.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, right? You're going to see the best of the best show up, and they're excited. They're eager to win, and we're excited to call these races. It's a long 2 days, But hey, if you want to win on a short track and get your name in the print of the stone, it's at Dirt City, and some of the best of the world you're going to get to watch and witness do great battles. And that's what I love about the place. The fast tracks are fun, but it's going to be great to be back at Dirt City.
Yeah, weather seems to be on our side as well. Again, take our forecast with a grain of salt every time, but a nice change of pace from ERX. Highs in the low 80s, not triple digit heat index like we saw a couple weeks ago. Probably more cloud than sun is the way it looks, but rain unlikely. Should stay dry. So 80-ish degrees, mostly cloudy, dry. That is racing weather. That is perfect to be a race fan, sit on the hill and enjoy some great food and great company and an ice cold drink.
Oh yeah, it was brutal looking outside of the announcer's booth and seeing all the friends and family and all those fans just stick it out. And man, it'll be nice to get a little break and watch some awesome off-road racing.
Well, we go live at 9:45 a.m. Central Time, Saturday, 25th of July for round 9. Hope to see you there. If not, we hope that you're able to tune in on Flow Racing. Pro Round 10, also available on Amazon Prime once again. That is 1 p.m. Central Time, Sunday. It's going to be a fun weekend. Rounds 9 and 10. Can't wait to get there. But that's it for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. He's Brent, I'm Shane, and we will talk to you again from Lena very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.
Man, so much to be excited. Man, let me try that again.